Thank you, everybody, for being here. The Education Committee is called to order. Today is April the 26th, which is Friday, about 8:05 a.m. We are meeting in the Davis Room 160 in the Capitol Building in Juneau. We were in 160, and this is not the Davis Room. Are we in room 106?
We are.
It says okay. On the door.
There you go. All right, we're in room 106. Session's almost over. All right, if you can put your cell phones on mute and silence them, and if the people out in the audience can do that as well. Today at LIO, we have Linda and forgot my other talk on it. Okay, I really apologize, Susan. I'm losing my mind today. And committee aide is Eugene Harnett. Today we have Representative Story, Representative Prox, Representative McCormick, Representative McKay, Representative Hemshoot, Representative Ruffridge, my vice chair, and myself, Representative Jamie Allard. And we have a quorum. There is four of us. So we're going to flip the schedule just a little bit. We're going to go ahead and listen to SB 29 first. And that will work on the civics education bill that was presented to us by Senator Stevens, our Senate president. And I will ask for a motion to move. Oh, go ahead.
Are we done with amendments?
Oh, I apologize. There were no amendments offered.
Okay.
I apologize. And I believe that the Senator Stevens staff had worked with members of this committee to have their combined ideas to move it and put it all in the CS. That is what the Senator Stevens' office has brought forward. So the CS as a working document, and if I can have a movement, I apologize, as a working document along with any amendments and fiscal notes, so we'll move it out of committee, but we just won't present any amendments. So I'm going to ask my vice chair or my co-chair if he can.
Madam Chair, I move House Education Committee adopt committee substitute for SB 29 version 33-LS0246/Y.
Brief at ease. Call the Education Committee back to order. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Education Committee adopt as a working document committee substitute for SB 29 version 33-LS0246/Y.
Thank you. Okay, so there is a proposed committee substitute in front of us, and I would like to welcome Mr. Lamkin forward, and he can brief us on the summary of the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Briefly, Madam Chair, I will object for purposes of discussion.
I apologize. Okay. There is an objection, and now you can go ahead and present the CS, please, Mr. Lamkin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you should be version Y Yankee of the bill. There were four changes in the CS that incorporated amendments that were discussed to date, and I met with each of you or your staff individually to go over them. The first includes inclusion of the language to the maximum extent practicable and to include a study of the comparative systems of government used around the world and those used by Alaskan Natives. It also includes an important component that would require development of a project-based assessment. That's change number one. Change number two inserts a new subsection. I casually refer to this as the Mao Amendment that would include required amounts of instruction and study of the history of communist regimes around the world. Change number three inserts in alignment and conforms with change number one, and that is to allow schools, or rather allow a student, first to require them to take the civics course and either take the exam, the written test, or complete a project-based assessment. And I'm happy to describe what that means going forward.
We already
forward.
Know that Senate President Stevens passed that with 100%, correct? Or was that, could have been click, Senator?
They both passed okay. Quite well. Change number four is consistent with existing regulations that provides for an exemption for students coming in from out of state. Most typically are military students if they've already completed their second year. If they're coming in as a junior or senior, they just simply don't have time to, in the context of completing all their other coursework, this would give them an out so that they can, if they've come in and already taken some other state's history course. That's a summary of the changes, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And do any of the, before I go into public testimony, I think we could hash out a few things and then the public can chime in. Does anybody, Representative Hemshoot, please?
Thank you, Chair Allard. I just glanced at the fiscal note and I see it's from last year. So it looks like maybe the bill changed since this fiscal note was issued. Thank you, through the chair.
Of course, please.
Through the chair, Representative Hinshute, the fiscal note should be consistent because there hasn't been much activity on this bill since last year. The CS could possibly result in an adjusted fiscal note, but I don't feel that that would be likely. Of course, I can't speak for the department, but we have informally received the department's support on this.
Thank you. Are there any, do you have a follow-up, Representative Hinshute?
We have it at ease.
Say that again.
We have,
oh, yes.
Sorry,
brief at ease. Okay, thank you. Calling the Education Committee to order, Representative Hemshire.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I apologize. I might have an old fiscal note here, but through the chair, my fiscal note refers to a civics commission, and I see it's from 2023, from February of 23. So it's possible I just don't have the most recent.
Through the chair, Representative Hinshute, the fiscal note I have, the most recent one, is dated January 10th, 2024. It reflects a $276,000 fiscal note and was consistent with what was reported out of Senate Finance last year.
My apologies. I just have an old document. Thank you.
Are there any other Representative Story, please?
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard, through the chair. Welcome, Mr. Lampkin. Thank you for working with us on the committee substitute. And I did have a question. When I'm looking at the changes, it talks about how has either achieved a passing score or completed a project-based assessment. And when I read the bill, it doesn't seem like it's an either or. It seems like it's you must do all of those. If you could clarify what is the case, I'd appreciate that.
Did you want to
through the chair
any substitute?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to explain, because I see it in the committee substitute.
Through the chair, Representative Story, in reviewing the Manual of Legislative Drafting published by LIA Legal, last updated in 2023 on page 61, it specifically references the use of and or as being too ambiguous, and they specify that deciding whether and or is appropriate in listing of several items include the and or only between the last two items in the list, not between each of the items. I have a copy of that available if you like, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you for clarifying that, that it is a and or, and I would appreciate the memo on that when you had a chance. Thank you.
Have it right here.
Did you want to pen that out, or? We could take a brief at ease. Do you just have one copy?
I made several copies
okay.
For everybody.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a brief at ease, and we'll hand that out. Calling the Education Committee back to order. Go ahead, Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Once again, for anyone listening that would like to review this, it is a public document available on the akleg.gov website under our LAA publications titled The Manual of Legislative Drafting vis-a-vis LAA Legal Division, last updated 2023.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Lampkin? Okay, I'm going to go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. What I'm going to do is move for public testimony. And then once we
get Madam Chair, I think we should adopt the committee's substitute as our working document first. We were just discussing the changes, and I had objection.
Okay, let me go ahead and do that.
I will remove my objection.
Thank you. That was my next line, actually, and this is why my staff tells me stay to the script. All right, so there is a proposed committee substitute for SB 29. Can I move a motion to adopt it as a working document, which we already did? And then co-chair Ruffridge just moved to adopt it. Are there any other objections? Apparently not. Okay, then the committee substitute has been adopted. And then I'm going to go into public testimony. Okay. Do I need to brief at ease? Do I need a sound? Calling the Education Committee back to order. What I do is, Mr. Lampkin, we're going to go ahead and take public testimony. We're going to start off with the individuals in the room, and I believe there will be people calling in. And then we will, looks like they're starting to call in. So we're going to go ahead and take the what's in the room. So I'm going to gavel in. Open up for public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? If you could please put your name on the record.
Yes, Madam Chair, Paul Foos. Former Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development, and speaking for myself today and speaking in support of this legislation. It's really important that our kids understand the civic structure of our state. 40 in the House, 20 in the Senate, equal branches of government and all of that. But I think it's just as important for them to understand is what does that mean to them? What does that mean to our state? What is the applied aspect of our civic structure? And you are the embodiment of it right now. You're not just a box checked on an org chart. You are the people that are actually implementing that civic structure at this time. And what are you doing with that? So I went through all your list of bills here, and there's no less than 94 bills in here dealing directly with natural resource public policy. Some of the most important aspects of our entire state, oil and gas, fishing, mining, subsistence, tourism, everything, you know, the future of our state had been the subject. Well, our kids need to understand that as well. And the information that they're getting right now is not correct. They're spending up to 9 hours a day on the cell phone. That's not good information. That's malign information, both in terms of civic structure and economic issues. And so I did some polling of the kids, and they said they're very concerned about climate change, and they all want to see electric vehicles. But then when they're asked, do they support mining in Alaska, they say no. Well, you can't make an electric vehicle without a mine. You just can't do it. In the meantime, how about the fact that they even have a school? You know, we wouldn't even have these schools without resource development. What we had before, they were being sent to boarding schools physically and emotionally exploited and having their mouths washed out with soap if they spoke their native language. That's the history of our state without resource development. So anyway, I think that the, I've spoken extensively with the Commissioner of Education and some of the, the Board of Education, and they would like to take this up as a separate but related unit, do all the civics, but let's also talk about a natural resource public policies, which is in the history of our state is the future of our state. So
I've got to treat everybody equal, and your testimony is now over. You give you a couple last sentences, but we need to wrap it up.
That's just basically it. And the only other thing is develop some pride in our students. And this is based on the governor's document he put out, the Alaska Standard, which highlights Alaska as a world leader in sustainable development. That's the message we ought to be giving our children.
So thank you very much for your testimony. We're going to move on. Is there anybody else in the room who would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I'm going to go to online. Is there anybody online who'd like to testify? Mr. Alex Copeland from Homer. Would you like to put your name on the record and begin your testimony? You have 2 minutes.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having this hearing. I'm a government teacher. I'm the Kenai retired, but still involved, and I followed this bill quite a bit. I'm still trying to figure out the final bill. I support civics education. We did it through government on the Kenai, and it had a different name than civics, but it still covers a lot of the things that we talked about. Plus, we do Alaska Native history for half a semester as well. The concern I have right now is, I'm in favor of SB 29, but some of the amendments I'm very concerned about. I'm glad they added instead of if you don't pass, you can have an alternative project that you can do, which is really great because it's hands-on, and we really applaud. I applaud that. Concerned about the Representative Mr. Lampkin said the Mao amendment, and so I did look into that and saw that there was like 6 people that were identified or 6 governments that were just communistic, or, you know, the Khmer Rouge and 4 other ones. And I'm wondering why that's in a civics bill, education bill, because I would think that would be covered in world government or some other area, because that's important stuff to cover as well. But in the civics bill, where we're trying to teach the civics of Alaska and the government and such, adding that just to me could be confusing. So, again, I don't think I can really get behind this bill until I see the final version. But that's one of my concerns I'm calling about today. But I'm glad that the House is listening to it, and I'm hoping that it does progress further. But some of the amendments that are in there, I have some concerns about. But, yeah.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else that online that would like to testify? Nope. Hearing and seeing no one. Nobody in the room. All right. It looks like we do have an amendment to the amendment, or to the CS version. Representative Prox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move conceptual amendment, I guess this will be number 1.
Is there an objection? Purposes.
Object for discussion?
Representative Prox.
Right. Conceptual amendment number 1 proposes a title change relating to environmental and sustainable resource development education. And it inserts a new section on page 2, I believe it is, line 11, insert a new section, environmental and sustainable development education. The board shall develop an environmental and sustainable resource development education program. And let's see, how's this going to work in there? Yeah. It deletes then... That's right. It deletes the words to encourage in 1430-38. It deletes the words encourage each school board to initiate and conduct a program of environmental education. But it substitutes the words environmental and sustainable development. So the idea of the amendment is to add sustainable development into the education curriculum, as Mr. Fu said.
Anybody have any questions for Representative Prox? Representative McCormick, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Not so much a question. I'm hoping to just provide my perspective on the amendment, if that is okay with the chair.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative.
Also, Madam Chair, please stop me if this is not germane to the amendment at hand. I just wanted to correct the record on a comment that was made by Mr. Foose about
resource development, or frankly the lack thereof, leading to boarding schools. I would like to correct the record to state that the Comity plan that was developed in Alaska that established these boarding schools was developed with resource development in mind, and the children that were forcibly removed from their homes and forced to be put in boarding schools were then used for unpaid labor in resource development. So I just want to correct that for the record. That was very concerning to hear that. Nonetheless, I appreciate the sentiment in this amendment to an extent. I do think there's a lot of value in facilitating nuance around environmental issues. Nonetheless, I think in the scope of civics, this kind of flies way out of the lane of what I think a civics education should be trying to accomplish. And I think also just builds on to creating too many guardrails for something that I think should ultimately be at the discretion of our educational institutions. So with that, I do not support this amendment, although I appreciate the dialogue around this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before you begin, Representative Story, I'm going to ask Mr. Lampkin to come back up. I'm sure we're going to ask his opinion on how he feels about the amendment and where it would fit into it or not in his bill, if you can continue.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. And my comments are, I know in the fiscal note that we just talked about, there was money to help develop the civics education. And here, there's another topic here, and I think it's going to add to the fiscal note. And I think it's really important that we perhaps look at, actually, this would have to be another bill in another session, because it's going to get a bigger fiscal note, and we know that we've been working on our budgets and there's not a lot of room in there. And so I think that I don't support the amendment.
Any other comment? Representative Hemshoot, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I think I actually have a question. In my previous life, I worked in a classroom, and I was involved in something called the Alaska Environmental Literacy Program, developed by educators at the Department of Fish and Game. And that evolved to include natural resources at some point. And I kind of lost track of it after that. So I don't really even know where that is right now. And I don't know if it included history. So I see the connection to civics because of the word history in here. And I see a lot of value in this. And I think I would welcome a different bill, a different day, working on only this, because I feel like we're straying from the original intent of this, of the civics education bill. And so it's not that I don't support what this amendment is trying to do. It's that I don't think it fits in what we're doing today. So I guess my question is, if the maker of the amendment could tell me the status of the natural resource education work through the Department of Fish and Game, and where this amendment fits with that.
Maker of the amendment.
Any other questions for Representative Prox? Representative Prox, do you mind if I go to the sponsor of the bill?
That would be great.
Mr. Lampkin.
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I appreciate this dialogue. I'd like to share with the committee that Senator Stevens has worked on this subject matter for many years now. And a simple Google search of the word civics will yield that the plain definition is a study of the rights, privileges, and duties of citizenship within your government, system of government, which dovetails with public policy, which can include things such as natural resource development, environmental policy, public health, public safety, mental health, a full list of public policy considerations. That is a departure from this bill. It would very much damage it. The content that's described in this amendment, in my opinion, is college-level work, and we would be compelling high school students to focus specifically on oil and gas, environmental type studies. So for those reasons, I can speak on behalf of Senator Stevens that he's not in support of this amendment.
I'm going to let Representative Prox have the closing comments. and where you stand with your amendment.
Well, I appreciate what Representative Hemshoot mentioned and what Mr. Lampkin mentioned, that this could be included in another bill. It's a different subject. I would argue the same thing on the history of communist, basically, governments in on page 2, starting on line 1. So, comments well taken. And I think I will withdraw this amendment, if that would be okay with the committee.
I will remove my objection and represent the practice of withdrawing his objection. So before we go on, does anybody have a question on the CS version or anything in the CS version? I've heard some comments and I have one. Okay, Representative Fox.
Well, I'd like to make another conceptual amendment, I guess. Okay. I move to delete on page 2, delete lines 1 through 11.
That would be the amendment that I have. So I can edit that and we could discuss.
I object for purposes of discussion.
There you go. Representative Fox, would you like to speak on your conceptual amendment? Is this amendment 2?
2. Right. Just a second.
So you'd like to move amendment 2?
I'd like to move amendment 2 to CS version 33-LS0246/Y.
Object.
I'll object for discussion.
Right.
Go ahead. Did you want to speak on your objection?
No,
okay.
I just...
Okay, go ahead, Representative McCormick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, Representative Prox, could you please restate the amendment?
To remove lines 1 through 11 on page 2.
Representative McCormick, go ahead, please. Oh, you don't have any? Okay. And did you want to speak on why you wanted it to be removed?
Well,
Before I go, I just wanted to let the public know that Representative Ruffridge is actually presenting another bill in finance. So it could be a little bit. And I don't want people thinking he just walked out. He has a commitment, and he will be back as soon as he can, if he can. Go ahead, Representative Prox.
Right. The previous comments made that this is a civics bill, not a history bill, are well taken. But and the removing lines 1 through 11 would take out the study of other systems of government that are listed, the 6 different systems under different rulers. It's not that students shouldn't know about that, but that does belong, I agree, it does belong in a history curriculum as opposed to a civics curriculum.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? All right. So I'm going to go ahead and speak into it in regards to, on looks like April 23rd, the House CS version for the CS for Senate bill included comparative systems of government used around the world. And then it looks like the Senate bill that came down was adjusted to take those lines out of it. I would argue that government is government and that our children need to learn about it. Not really sure the heartache of why our civics would want to exclude the governments around the world, because if this isn't just – civics isn't just compiled to right here in the state of Alaska. I don't think our kids know enough about communism, and they need to learn how other parts of the world – work and that we might not want in communism implemented in our great country. So I am against your amendment 2, and we could let Representative or Mr. Lampkin go ahead and speak on the amendment, and we can go from there.
Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I'd like to reiterate that civics, by definition, is a study of the rights, privileges, and duties of citizenship within your system of government. And this particular, what I'm casually referring to as the Mao Amendment, would include a study of those systems of government and the rights, privileges, or lack thereof that those citizens had in that regime. Senator Stevens is supportive of this amendment at this time.
So are you in support of his amendment to take it out, or are you in support of his amendment to keep it in?
Excuse me, I misspoke. Supportive of maintaining the language in the bill.
Representative McCormick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious why specifically just communist systems of government. I'm curious why not other systems of government as well.
Are you asking?
Madam.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What other, you asked, there was a second part I didn't hear. You said, why just the communists and what? Go ahead. What was
Thank you. Why not, like, say, like, perhaps, like, fascist regimes, things of that nature, or other mixed economies?
Thank you. And he could also answer that, because communism is fascism. So I have that in there. My children are actually in school here in the public system, and they didn't learn that in school. They learned it from their mom and dad. So communism and fascism go hand in hand. So I left. That's why I put that in there, to cover both. But Mr. Lampkin, if you wanted to respond to
Tim Lampkin, thank you for the question. The Section B, the Mao Amendment, is a short list that could be a very, very long list. I would invite the committee to consider the fact that under Part A, that language was carefully crafted to include a study of comparative systems of government. And so any other person that you can imagine or regime and so forth could be included under comparative systems and not necessarily changing or removing Section B.
Does anybody have any further questions? We are going to take a vote. Okay. My objection holds.
I'll remove my objection for discussion then.
I object.
And then you object to have a vote.
Are you ready? All right. Go ahead and
explain, please, Madam Chair, what we are voting on.
Thank you. So we're going to vote on whether the Amendment 2 is remaining inside of the CS version. Representative Prox made an amendment, if I may, to remove the language. And can you repeat the lines that you were speaking of?
It would remove lines 1 through 11 on page 2.
Does everybody understand that what we're voting on, Representative McKay?
Madam Chair, I think I'm a no vote because the sponsor prefers to leave that section in. I just want that to be clear out. So I will be a no vote just for that reason. So we're all on the same page.
No worries. Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is difficult for me because of the sponsor's desire to keep it in. On the other hand, the more we expand the bill, the greater the burden on the schools to make sure that they're staying within the exact letter of this law. So for that reason, I would like to see the language removed. Okay. Thanks.
Anybody else have any comments?
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. My comment to the committee is basically what Mr. Lampkin just said, is that on page 1, line 7, there are comparative systems of government in there. So I don't think this need to be spelled out in this amendment because I think they can be covered. So,
okay. We're going to just take a quick brief at ease. Calling the Education Committee back to order.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my objection.
Okay. We will then take a vote. Representative.
No, I will. No, let's take a vote.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a vote. Can you please call the roll?
Representative Story?
No.
Representative Frost?
Yes.
Representative McCormick?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
No.
Representative Pinshu?
No.
Co-chair Allard?
No.
Co-chair Ruffridge is not present, so that's 2 yeas, 4 nays.
All right, so with 4 nays and 2 yeas, amendment number 2 fails to pass. Okay, now we're moving on, and let's take a brief at ease, please. Call the Education Committee back to order. Representative McKay.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative McKay here for the record. I move that the House Education Committee adopt Senate Bill 29, version 33, LS0246/Y, and move it from committee with the attached fiscal notes as the working document and move it out of committee.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, the CS to SB 29 has moved out of committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. I'm calling the Education Committee back to order. I'm going to see Kelly. Can you hear me by any chance? And Elizabeth?
Yes, I can hear you now. Okay,
thank you. So if you guys want to go ahead and mute yourselves, and then when the questions come out, we'll go from there or the testimony. Mm-hmm. All right. Which one of you beautiful ladies am I starting off with? Am I? Okay. If you could go ahead and put your – I'm going to go ahead and sign – I'm just going to let the public know. We have Kathy Moffitt here, Innovation Education Excellence in Person, Kelly Manning, Deputy Director of Innovation Education, Dr. Elizabeth Greiner, and we have Laurel with the SHU, with the lead as the legislative liaison. All right. Go ahead, Ms. Moffitt. If you want to begin the presentation and put your name on the record, we are all ears.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Co-Chair Allard and the committee for inviting us to come and present today. You've already indicated the people that are here and online, so I won't repeat that. Kelly Manning will be helping with the presentation, so I will turn it over to Kelly to begin.
Good morning. For the record, this is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, and we're going to share our 2022-2023 assessment results this morning. Thank you for having us. If we can go to the next slide, start with our mission, vision, and purpose. I know you're all familiar. I'll just highlight that our assessment team really focuses here on the purpose of our division, which or our department, which is to provide information, resources, and leadership to support an excellent education for every student every day. And so our assessment team really serves as that support and technical assistance to our districts in administering statewide assessment. With our strategic priorities, the assessment information that we glean is helpful in providing guidance and support to our districts in how to address the 5 shared priorities, in particular areas that are informed by the academic results from our assessment. So our closing the achievement gap, supporting students to read in at grade level by the end of third grade. These areas are really supported by having that statewide assessment information and data that helps to inform decision making for our districts and state. I'm going to go through an overview of our statewide summative assessments. as you can see here, our AK-STAR, the Alaska System of Academic Readiness, assesses our students in English language arts and mathematics for grades 3 through 9, and our Alaska Science Assessment assesses students in science for grades 5, 8, and 10. These are our two newest assessments. They've been developed in the last couple of years and have really looked at innovative approaches to how we can collect that information and inform our educators on how students are performing in English language arts, mathematics, and science. Our dynamic learning maps and our WIDA assessments assess students that have different needs than some of our other students. So this is not administered to all of our students. The dynamic learning maps is administered to students with significant cognitive disabilities that are unable to take the Alaska Science Assessment or the AK-STAR. And so they will take the dynamic learning maps in English language arts, math, and science in those same grades. So English language arts and math in grades 3 through 9, and science for grades 5, 8, and 10. Our WIDA assessment is an assessment of English language learners. And this is an ability to assess the English language proficiency for students that are English language learners in grades K through 12. The National Assessment for Educational Progress is our national assessment, as in the title. And this assessment varies by year. Some years they're assessing in different areas, but most commonly in Alaska, we participate in the math and reading assessment. And these are typically administered in grades 4 and 8, and sometimes in grade 12. That assessment data is helpful in looking at how our student performance in the state compares with student performance across the nation. The Alaska Developmental Profile is an assessment that we provide to kindergartners, and those who maybe didn't take kindergarten or attend kindergarten will be assessed in first grade. And this is an opportunity for us to really look at how are our students coming into our schools before they've received academic instruction. There's 13 goals and indicators with 5 domains from Alaska's learning guidelines. And this is, again, administered in the fall.
Co-Chair Allard.
Oh, Representative Story, I apologize.
Yes. May I ask a couple questions now, or would you like to wait?
If you guys want to ask questions in between, we have plenty of time. Are you okay with that, Kathy?
Yes.
Everybody else? Okay, yes. Go ahead, Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair, I had 2 questions, probably for Ms. Manning, through the chair. And welcome, Ms. Manning. Good to see you. It says a sample of students. So if you could just give me an explanation of the sample size and where we get those students from, which districts take them. And then the developmental profile, have we gotten the developmental profile this year? And if we haven't, I'd love to have our committee get that. Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions in between? Okay, go ahead and continue, please.
Yes, again, for the record, this is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. And I'll first start with, yes, we have administered the Alaska Developmental Profile. And we've provided a broader report that includes the Alaska Developmental Profile information to the legislature, but we can provide just the pullout of the Alaska Developmental Profile, and we'll follow up with that after our presentation today. And I'm going to ask Dr. Greniger to share a little bit more detail about how the sample works for the National Assessment of Educational Progress.
Thank you. And Dr. Greniger, if you could please put your name on the record and go ahead and begin your testimony.
Good morning. For the record, Elizabeth Greniger, Assessments Administrator at DEED. For NAEP, it is a stratified sample, so it is not administered to the broad range of students in our state. It is a sample that's selected both at the district, so specific districts are chosen each administration of NAEP, and then the students within those districts are sampled from that selection. So we can get a few more details on exactly the parameters of how that sample is chosen and the exact districts chosen. I don't think we can actually provide that for 2024. It was just administered in January through March, but we can give a little more detail about how that sample was chosen.
Thank you.
Anybody have, Representative Hemshue, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. This is a quick question through the chair. NAEP also tests in science, and we're one of the only states that doesn't test in NAEP science. Can somebody explain why?
Go ahead.
Yes, again, for the record, this is Deputy Director Kelly Manning. And so we had looked at the science NAEP assessment, and because when we updated our science assessment in Alaska, we really started to look at how we could assess students a little bit differently and really evaluate not just their knowledge base in science and when what they've memorized, but also their ability to apply those skills. Our science assessment and the way that we're applying it really differs quite a bit from the NAEP assessment. And so because of our different approach, we had made the decision that we would not continue to assess in science. We do evaluate those from time to time and really look at how do those standards align to our state standards and reassess that over time. Currently, that's the stance of the department.
Go ahead, Representative Hemshut, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Chair Allard. I would like to go on record as saying I think that if a student knows science, they know science, and we should be participating in opportunities to know how much our kids know in science. It's a strength in our state. Thank you.
I agree with that comment. Thank you, Representative Hemshut. Any other comments before or questions before we go on? No? Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. We can move to the, I can't quite see the slides. I think we're on the Amplify slide. So in the past year with the passage of the Alaska Reads Act, we've implemented the newest assessment for the state, which is our screener of literacy skills. And so we have implemented statewide the DIBLES assessment, Dynamic Indicators of Basic Early Literacy Skills. This is provided by Amplify as the vendor. In almost all of our districts, there are districts do have the option to opt to use a different screener if they've requested a waiver, and we have two districts that have done so. But most of our districts have used the statewide provided screener, and that's the DIBLES assessment. This is a set of procedures and measures for assessing the acquisition of literacy skills, and again, is aligned to the requirements of the Alaska Reads Act. It is provided by statute for grades K through 3, but we also provide the opportunity for districts to assess for grades K through 5 under the state assessment.
So I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute because I'm stuck on something. Representative Hemshut brought up Alaska Science Assessment. Can you please go back? Repeat what you said about the Alaska Science Assessment, and then I would like Representative Hemshut to come back in and elaborate a little bit on her perspective. She was a teacher for, I don't know, more than half your life?
Yeah. May I clarify?
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Through the chair, NAEP offers a science assessment, and then there's the Alaska State Science Assessment. Okay. We do the Alaska Science, I think it's called Alaska Science Assessment. But we don't participate in that part of NAEP that tests science.
Okay.
So NAEP is a national test.
Right, and you were questioning why we didn't do that. And Kelly, could you repeat your answer on that again? Or was it Dr. Grinninger?
I'll let Dr. Grinninger add any details that she would like to what I shared. The decision that we had made at the state had been to not participate in science because of the way that our standards are administered in the state, but I'll let Dr. Grinninger add any details that she might have, and if not, we can provide further follow-up. Dr. Grinninger, is there anything you'd like to add to what I shared before?
I might be over, like, interested in it. I'm just curious.
The only additional piece I would add is some of this decision was, it predated my time at the department, but as Kelly shared, those are some of the pieces of information and why it hasn't been assessed. It has been a topic of interest in this past administration. So we have certainly heard some of the feedback, like what you're sharing, and can reconvene on that discussion. I would say that another global piece that has come into that decision-making and just our overall thinking about assessment in Alaska is that we hear a lot of feedback about the amount of time students are testing, and we really want to take into consideration the value and purpose of each of the assessments that we're putting in front of our students, especially when we consider the statewide perspective and what we're requiring of our districts and our students. So those are some of the things that we have been thinking about, and we also value science and the information that comes from those assessments, both at the state and the national level. And this is an important perspective that you bring. for our consideration.
So, thank you, Dr. Grininger. So what I'm hearing you say is that if we spend too much time testing, then we're actually not learning, perhaps. And we're trying to work that out and work it through. Okay, that's good. I can agree on that. I don't like tests either. Representative Henshute, do you have anything to follow up or anything? Okay. All right. Thank you. Go ahead with your presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. So we'll pick up again with the Alaska System of Academic Readiness. And I just want to highlight here, we share this image that addresses the umbrella of our new system. In the past, we've had a summative assessment at the end of the year for our statewide summative on English language arts and math. And with the new Alaska System of Academic Readiness, the AK-STAR, we're actually incorporating our interim assessment of MAP growth. And so we get more data points with actually less testing time. So to come back to what Dr. Grininger was just sharing, it is our intent to try to make sure that we have good information and data, but that we're not spending too much time assessing students. So what this new system allows us to do is to incorporate that interim assessment that we do in the fall and winter with our spring summative. And we get a couple of things from that. So we've reduced the testing time, but we get additional data points. So in the fall and winter, we get information on not just the MAP growth that many of our students were doing prior to this new system, but we also are able to get a projected proficiency score. So when those students assess their families and their educators get a projected proficiency that indicates how that student might perform on the state summative assessment. All of that obviously depends on the instruction that's received, and there's information provided in those reports in the fall and winter of what target areas should be focused on with those students in their goal setting to help them achieve proficiency when they do the summative assessment in the spring. With the spring summative assessment, they're doing one assessment and getting both the MAP growth performance information as well as their summative performance. So with that spring assessment, they determine how they did perform on the spring summative, but also get the components of MAP growth that help to set those targets for fall learning. Because of the way that those are administered, they get that MAP growth assessment right then in spring. And then when we're able to release the statewide results, then they get that piece as well. This new assessment system is innovative. It is something that is unique to Alaska and something we've worked very closely with our vendor, NWEA, to develop specific to Alaska and to meet our Alaska needs. We're very excited about this assessment, and we believe that it is providing better data and information to our districts throughout the year.
Oh, looks like we
with
have
the
can you stand by Representative Story, and then we're going to go to Representative yeah. Fox.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. If I had a comment to make, that's what I would like to do.
Absolutely.
I just want to say that I know this evolved through a lot of hard work on the part of the department, and on taking into feedback from parents, school staff, school board members, that let's take a test that actually is relevant to student learning. And so this is quite an accomplishment, and it's a great thing. And I know Alaska is being looked at because part of the assessment now, one assessment helps with learning, but it also can be the summative piece. So just congratulations to everybody. And I think it's a great example of how the various levels of policymakers who work with our kids work together for the assessment system. So I appreciate that.
Question or comment?
Yes, thank you. Question, I guess. Is the overall goal of these tests to compare, well, I guess it goes down to the district level eventually, the information on your website, but that is to compare school performance and district performance to a nationally set standard? Is that a fair statement?
So through the chair, Representative Prox, again, this is Kelly Manning, the Department of Education. Each of our assessments has a slightly different purpose. And so as we're looking at the different assessments, you know, when we're looking at, for example, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, that really is how does Alaska compare with our national students. with the AK Star, we have a number of different ways that we can look at student performance. Because Map Growth has a RIT score, which is there, it's a RASH unit score, and that is a specific to Map Growth, but it really looks at how do these students perform both in their classroom, but also how does that look when you compare that score across the nation. When we look at just the summative component of AK Star, we're really looking at the state performance. So how does that student perform against our state standards? So within the AK Star itself, there's a number of different ways that we can look at the data and different ways that we can compare student performance. So each assessment has slightly different approaches to how we're looking at this, the comparisons. With the AK Star, the other piece that we get is the individual student has growth metrics. And so we can look at how that student is performing each time that they're assessing over time. And when they continue to take that assessment three times a year from third grade through ninth grade, we can actually track how that student is progressing over time. And so you can get that individual student look, as well as then looking at how are students within a class or a school making that progress over time. So there's sort of a number of ways that we can do that within the AK Star.
Okay. If I might follow up. I just bring this up because it is difficult for parents who are not day-to-day immersed in what the schools and the Department of Education are trying to accomplish to understand from the, well, it's difficult for me and others who aren't immersed in this every day to understand what is trying to be accomplished and what they should do because they have taken the time to look at the results. Does it mean I need to talk to the my student's teacher? Does it mean I need to talk to the principal? Does it mean I need to talk to the school board? Does it mean I need to talk to my representative? What am I supposed to do now that I have this information? It is really a challenge, time-consuming challenge to figure out, for the individual parent to figure out what they are supposed to learn and or do because of the information that's out there. So it would be helpful to focus on some presentation that is accessible to individuals at the internet, I would guess, to explain just what we're trying to get out of this. And the audience being parents, not teachers, not schools, whatever. Because it's not a good idea to have me try and explain to them what you're trying to do.
I'm going to go to Ms. Moffitt first to respond to Representative Prox or whoever, and then we'll move on to Representative Hinshaw.
Sure. Kathy Moffitt, Director of Innovation and Education Excellence. Those are really good points, and I want you to know that there's a lot of work being done to address that, and Dr. Gruniger and her team, they have a lot of stuff on the website, and I will let her elaborate, but they have district test coordinators, and they are kind of like the conduit from the work that her team is doing down to the districts. So I will refer to you, Elizabeth, to elaborate. Thank you.
Absolutely. Elizabeth Kreniger again, for the record, Assessments Administrator. This is actually one of my favorite parts of the work that we've been doing is really around assessment literacy. So we have a robust component of AK Star, but that really spreads across our entire assessment system in the way we're thinking about assessment in Alaska. And assessment literacy is a term that is intended to help all stakeholders, parents, families, students themselves, as well as policymakers and educators, really understand what assessments are intending to do. So again, their purpose and use, why we select particular assessments to use in our classrooms, and how the results of those are used. So a big piece of that work over the last 3 years has been around developing tools and resources for our families, for our students themselves, and for the educators who serve them, and how to best understand the information that's coming out of our assessments. So just a few examples of what we're doing. In terms of your question, Representative Cox, the messaging to families has been important to us. We know that we need to make information accessible and ensure that what families are hearing is information that they can actually take and use and inform their work with their own children or their students. And so we have developed a toolkit that educators can use because they are the ones who touch those students and those families most closely. So we have a lot of educator-facing resources that are intended to then be turned around and used with the families and the students. We also have somewhat of a media campaign. We have several videos that we've done, one most recent one by Commissioner Bishop that explains our evolution of our system and the current landscape we're in of changing our cut scores and the reasons for that, and just trying to be as transparent as possible with families about how the system was designed, why it's been designed the way it has, and why this is so important for our students and families. So again, all of that comes with a lot of training and professional learning. And then one other thing I'll speak to is the reporting. So a big piece of our work with NWA has been around developing accessible reports for all of those stakeholders. So what families see as an individual student report, and there's a lot of information there that breaks down the score and helps them understand how their student is performing at an individual level and then a school district. And if there's norming national data available, we provide that as well. And then it's been very important for us to ensure there's information about next steps. So you have this information about how a student performed. What can we do next? What are the things that can happen in the classroom or at home to help bring that student forward in their academic progression?
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm going to make this as brief as I can. There's a lot to talk about when we talk about assessment, and it's an incredibly important part of what educators do.
Representative Hemshoot, you don't. We have time.
Okay.
Go
ahead and go in like you. 1, 2, 3. Okay. So my first question is, when you say the NAEP is to compare states to other states, I believe the actual underlying function of the NAEP is to look at the performance of subgroups as a civil rights tool to understand where we need to be increasing our effort. And so it is used to compare states to other states, but the actual fundamental function of the NAEP is to explore at a federal level where we need to direct funding to support kids who might be underachieving as compared to other kids. So I don't know if you'd like to make any additional comment on that or correct me if I'm misunderstanding.
No, this is again Kelly Manning for the record. I believe that's accurate. And I think as you shared, Representative Hemshoot, a sort of a function of how it tends to be used is to compare across states, but it does provide information about subgroups and their performance across national standards.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yep. Go ahead, Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think it would be beneficial to talk about the terms summative, formative, and interim. I think Rep. Prox made a really good point. I apologize, through the chair. Made a really good point about families needing to understand this, but just as much as families need to understand it, the people in this room and in this body need to understand what the assessments are all about. And one of the best moves the department has ever made was to combine the AK Star with MAP through NWA, through the vendor. And that has made it so that when we give a test in a school right now, it tells us what that student knows and where that student needs to grow, as well as providing the state the information they need. And I think it's really important for people to understand the difference between formative, summative, and interim. If somebody could explain those terms, please.
Absolutely, through the chair, Representative Hemshoot. I'm going to allow Dr. Greniger to speak to that because she's very eloquent at being able to explain.
Ms. Manning and Dr. Greniger, when anytime you speak, if you could just say your name, put it on the record for those that are at home, and then we can come back in. Okay, thank you.
For the record, this is Elizabeth Greniger, Assessments Administrator. And yes, this is kind of a spinoff of what I was just talking about. Assessment literacy is all about that exact question. What are the different types of assessments? When are they most appropriate? And how do we use the results from them? So a quick tutorial in the three types of assessments you asked about. Formative assessments are those assessments that are happening in real time in the classroom. They can take a lot of different forms or formats. Most often a formative assessment is a reflection of the classroom instruction. So what a teacher is doing in the day to day, in the minute to minute even. So often it's not even a formal assessment. It's just a conversation, or it can be student work. It can be some type of check-in an educator is doing with the students in that classroom. So that is what our teachers are doing across the state all day, every day. And there are some more formal types of formative assessments. But then as we move up that progression, an interim assessment, as Kelly has shared, the component that we use is MAP Growth. So the vast majority of our districts are using MAP Growth as the interim assessment across the state. There are other types of interim assessments, both products, you know, those that are designed by vendors and those that are designed maybe at the local level. But using the example of MAP Growth, this is an assessment that is done at key points in the instructional period. So in this case, over the course of a year, an interim assessment is intended to gather information about how students are performing at key points in their instruction. And then, of course, the summative assessment is what we use at the end of a period of instruction. So in the case of the summative assessments for our state, it happens at the end of the school year. The summative assessments that we use are criterion reference. So those are assessing students on the academic expectations for the grade level. We're obligated to assess the standards alignment of our state. That's our federal requirement, is to ensure that we're measuring student learning at each grade level on those standards that we've defined for our state. So there's in the interplay between the interim assessment and the summative assessment here in Alaska, again, that is a unique piece that we've developed and defined. So those two tests do have distinct purposes, but we're bringing those together to leverage the benefits of each and to gather that obligated and required information about how our students are performing at the end of a school year, while also progressing toward that and finding out how they're demonstrating that growth over time within the year and from year to year. And I'm happy to also share, we can follow up with some additional webinar resources as well as documents that we have. We have some things on our website, and then we have some sessions that we've done with a variety of stakeholders. We'd also be very pleased to work with our vendor to develop a presentation or a webinar for your audience, policymakers. And again, that is the goal of the assessment literacy work. I have been working closely with the Alaska Association of School Boards over the last 2 years to attend their meetings and bring them information at their request for, you know, understanding better about how our assessment system is designed and how that can best be used in their local settings.
Representative Hemshoot, I know you probably have a follow-up, and I'm apologizing, committee. I thought this was our last slide. Apparently, we have 25. So if you want to do a quick follow-up, and then we can move on.
Yes.
All right, if we could go to the next slide. Thank you, Representative Hemshoot. Who's briefing?
Thank
you. Go ahead, Ms. Manning.
Yes. Thank you. For the record, again, this is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. So I want to share our AK Star development process. As we've talked about, this is an innovative assessment and really looks at assessment differently than how we have in the past. And because of that, we have gone through a multi-step process that is longer than a typical new summative assessment development. And so I just want to highlight a few key points. In spring of 2022, DEED administered throughout the state both the AK Star and MAP Growth assessments as two separate assessments. So there was a window for the AK Star summative that only covered the summative assessment items, And then after that closed, our districts administered the MAP growth assessment that spring. Based off of the performance of students on those two assessments, DEED with our vendor conducted an alignment study and setting of our initial cut scores using a standard setting process. This is a typical process that we go through in determining where we should set the cut scores. When we did that, we knew that the next year our administration was going to look slightly different. And so we had planned from the beginning that after the spring summative assessment, we would do a validation study. So in spring of 2023, we administered the AK Star and MAP Growth as one aligned assessment for the first time. Following that, we conducted a validation study, looking at the initial cut scores, and then actually going through the full process again with another group of educators from around the state to really look at how students are performing, looking at our cut scores and where they should be based off of our Alaska education standards for English, language arts, and mathematics. So following that, we had two sets of data, and we convened a policy review committee in an effort to really look at the information that we had and bring in further information about student performance of Alaskan students to really consider where was the right place to set our cut scores. Based off of that, we did look at refining those cut scores. So we made some adjustments to the cut scores from what we had set in 2022. That was completed in August of 2023, and then we went through the process, which is a little bit lengthy, to get the approval for adjusted cut scores. So in winter of 2024, our State Board of Education approved our final cut scores. And so our scores for the 2022-2023 assessment were a little bit delayed. We've just released them earlier this month. But now that we've gotten through that process moving forward, we will be returning back to our typical score reporting, and we'll be able to release results in the fall each year, right around the beginning of the school year, which will help districts to inform decisions for the coming year. This, again, was the process and plan that we laid out for setting our cut scores. And Director Moffitt is going to share a little bit more information on really how we've made the determinations and where we landed with our cut scores. So I'm going to hand over to Director Moffitt.
Thank you, Kelly. Kathy Moffitt, for the record, Director of Innovation and Education Excellence. And Kelly's done a good job of describing kind of the process. And the cut scores, I just want to define as those are the scale scores that sit between the level of proficiency. So it's not an exact science, and it has taken a lot of work with the team to look at it, relook at it, and relook at it. Well, after the validation study that was done in the summer of 2023, it was determined that the cut scores warranted a further review, as Kelly has mentioned. So what does that all mean? Well, what you are looking at before you is a linking study. So it is linked that Alaska standard cut score with the MAP growth score. So where do our students have to fall? And you'll see the red box, that's third grade. And you will notice that 206, it's the RIT score. So RIT is that Rosh unit. And it's just a scaled unit, like a degree is to temperature, the RIT is to learning. And so when we look at that and we see 206, we see that the percentile correspondent there is 71 percentile. So that kind of triggers that, well, what percentage of our students would we expect to be proficient? And that would say nationally, looking at it, it's about 29%. So the question then becomes, why are so many Alaskan students on track and still not meeting grade level standards? So we're going to talk a little bit about Andy. So in this, Andy's a third grader, and he's taken his MAP test at the winter, and he has that RIT score of 190. And then we know that the cut level cut score to be proficient would have to be about 206. And those are just two numbers, and they really don't mean much until we look at it again with a scale, and you see the bell curve there, knowing that halfway through, 50% on one side, 50% on the other. So we see Andy's winter score. And then we also see what would be considered the need for intensive intervention. Andy isn't really needing intensive intervention. He's a little bit below, and we see that spring proficiency from winter to spring looks like a pretty good jump. But what does it mean? Well, it actually would mean about 1.6 years of growth. And then we ask ourselves, you know, is that doable? So then we think about growth. What is the average growth? And you see it right there halfway through. And we look at the 85th percentile growth. That's way high. That's a high level of growth. And we compare that again, looking at Andy's winter score and where Andy would need to be by spring. And we can see even with a high level of growth, Andy's short of meeting that spring proficiency. So therein lies the need for the policy review. And this chart is kind of busy. We couldn't do one piece of data at a time. So you see all of it. But you see Andy's growth with the dark. You see the growth needed. And then you see where Andy really was in the spring at 193, that RIT score. And we see what's a typical range of growth for students. So the 206 was the previous Alaska cut score. When, after the policy review and the team looked at it, they adjusted it to 201. So you can see that it's still above the range of typical growth, but it's more palatable, more doable, and still in line with where we want to be in Alaska.
I'm going to go in for the first question. Did we lower the standard so we lowered the standard?
No, we did not lower the standard. We lowered, and that's a really good question. Standards are the standards, and they're the same, and we're measuring the standard. When teachers set the cut score, then they had the linking study. What it indicated is that where we set our cut scores were too high. It was... And each grade level differed. And so in the policy review, they looked at that and adjusted. But they did not adjust standards. That's a different process. So as measuring to our standards where we need to be with those students going through the year with that fall MAP, winter MAP, those are the RIT scores. And as Kelly said, each of those windows gives a predictability of where a child will fall with a summative assessment in the spring.
Okay, thank you. We want to welcome back Representative Ruffer to you. Missed all the spiciness. Okay. Oh. Representative Prox, you can start.
I'm sure all of that made a lot of sense to you.
I'm sure.
But we need some sort of a test after these presentations, some sort of a test that we can take to make sure we understand what you just said. I'm not sure that I do.
And I am. And I'm more than willing to present or talk to you.
Sorry. Just keep putting your name on the record.
Yes.
You might need a presentation to the presentation.
Okay, there you go.
We can do that later. Representative Fox, did you have...
No, I just... We got to think about this. Mm-hmm. We're speaking... We tend to do this. We tend to speak to ourselves and forget our audience, meet the needs of the audience.
So that you, anyway, we
I'm
could be...
I'm complaining. For the record, I'm complaining.
Representative Prox is complaining. For the record, make sure we get that down.
I got it.
Mrs. Moffitt.
Kathy Moffitt, for the record, Director of Innovation.
Tell them where you're with, too. And it's like we're saying, we have the community on board. What department are you with?
I'm D.
Thank you.
Yes, Director of Innovation Education Excellence. That's a great response, and we had to share that with all of our superintendents and stakeholders across the state. There's an excellent video that articulates that, so we will make sure that when we talk about the case of Andy, and that's often the question that's generated, is why the adjustment to the cut scores And does that mean that we lowered our standards? That's a great point. So we will ensure that this body has that video, and that will help a lot. And if there are further questions, I'm more than willing to assist.
I think, Ms. Moffitt, we might be able to bring you back in to kind of play the video for the community, and then maybe have a presentation on test scores.
Perfect.
Specifically. Mm-hmm. Representative Hemshoot, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I can be really brief with this.
Are you going to try to explain? Can you help us out?
Probably not.
Okay.
Through the chair, I would say the report for parents out of MAP, to me, is, I know you're explaining, it's very normal to have to renorm your standards after you create a new assessment. So this is all a normal process. I understand that. To understand the MAP and what we're talking about with RIT scores, I find it really helpful to use the graph that we give to families, mm-hmm. where you've got your red, yellow, orange, green, whatever. And for example, a colleague here is so immensely proud of his child because on his MAP, he came back with, you know, his achievement percentile is not all that stellar, but his growth percentile is amazing. And that is, I think, the beauty of the MAP. And that's missing here, even though I know you're trying to help us understand the change in the cut scores. Understanding what the MAP can show us, I think, would be incredibly beneficial. Just even one of those graphs with the kid's name blacked out would be possibly helpful. Thank you.
Kathy Moffitt, for the record, Director of Deed. Thank you for that comment. That's very good. And I will say that MAP growth is that parents love that, and it's a different report. And therein lies kind of the complexity of taking the summative with that end of the year MAP growth. And so the above examples are connecting the two of how we know using our MAP growth scores where the student will fall in the spring. So thank you for that. And we are more than willing to do a presentation on MAP growth as well.
All right, we're gonna move on to more slides.
So this is just showing, we're gonna look at results of AK Star for 2023, and that the looking at what we consider proficient and what we consider non-proficient. So in the proficient, we have the advanced and proficient. And so as we go to the next slide, we're going to see this is the results, a global look at the results for all grades 3 through 9. So when we, you can see the different colors are advanced, proficient, approaching proficient, and need support.
Can I pause you really quick, Representative Ruffridge? Did you want to ask now, or do you want to?
Just as we go through these pie charts, I wanted to understand if the pie charts are with the new cut of the scores.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Great question.
Representative, we're going to.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. I would just simply request if we could have the third grade scores. I realize this is third through ninth grade, but mm-hmm. I think it'd be helpful to have third grade because we know that's
coming.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
All right. So
as we look at this, when we look at all the grades, we're about 32% of our students would be considered proficient. Moving on, we now see that same data look by grade level. So to Member Story's comment, we look at the third grade, and that's kind of optics are on the third grade. And so we see that we have about 27.3 of our students that we would consider using the summative assessment scores for AK Star.
Any questions? Representative Story.
Yes. So with our requirements of our Alaska Reads Act in third grade, parents need to decide if they want to promote their child or have them not be promoted. And so are you saying that there's 72% of our children are having that conversation with their teachers, or is it just the 39% who are in the need support? And why I'm asking is I know they have to do reading improvement plans for all those children, and you know, there's quite a bit involved in that, and so I'm wanting to know the focus.
This, thank you for the question, Kathy Moffat, Director of DEED. As we progress through the year, the summative assessment is taken at the end of the year. So what guides the work throughout the year is another interim type of assessment, and it's the DIBELS. And based on the DIBELS, that's given much like MAP, but it's K through 3. And so it's the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and the end of the year. That assessment is used for a screening tool. And based on that, the well below category would be the category for which the individual reading improvement plans are written. And that is the, and then through that, those plans, it incorporates what we call progress monitoring. So it's every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, so that you're always monitoring what you say you are instructing. And that's what you need. That's what will guide instruction versus a summative at the end. This is really good, and it starts our baseline looking for trends, looking for what we're doing, what's working well, maybe what's not working well.
Thank you. And Representative Ruffridge has a question.
I do. Thank you. Actually, Representative Story sort of asked my question, but I was kind of thinking I knew what the answer was, but thank you for the answer. And I'm wondering if the connection between the assessments that are offered throughout the year, such as DIBELS, if that matches or correlates, or we can cross-section those with AK star and determine if those are meeting the requirements of our testing or our assessment criteria. So, for example, do 40% of the kids that take DIBELS in third grade require a intervention, essentially, as this seems to indicate?
That is a great question, through co-chair to member Ruffridge, co-chair Ruffridge. It's the nature of the assessments are vastly different. The DIBELS is that 1 minute, and it's building and measuring, if you will, discrete skills that indicate that the student is learning to break the code, for lack of a better word. So it's 1 minute probes. There is some research that indicates that the 1 minute probe for oral reading fluency does correlate to comprehension. What is different in the assessments, and I just had a district reach out to me saying what we need is what he calls a gap year with those automaticity measures, and then you're taking a test that's asking you to read a passage and reference information within the passage and write responses. So it's a different type of test. And this person was suggesting that we need to really look at our Alaska state standards, and then what does it look like? What might be some tools teachers use to ensure that students are ready and able to do that? So this is our baseline year. So you bring a really good point to it, and it's something that we certainly have our eyes on.
Thank you. Just to follow up, if I may, and I hope this is a brief sort of question and answer, but throughout this year, it being the formative year, how many, percentage-wise, how many students, when assessed, needed an individualized reading plan by percentage?
That is a great question. Thank you for that. I would say that is something I'd like to get back to you on so that I have the exact numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Hemshoot.
Just very quickly, through the chair, for the advanced, what is a normal expectation for a percentage of students who would be in the advanced range? So I know how many kids in the world population would be considered gifted. How many kids would we expect to see in advanced?
Are you talking in relation to Alaska's, the AK Star?
Correct. Like these tests are given in each state. Each state has their own test. Mm-hmm. Do other states have roughly 10% of kids testing as advanced? Should we see more kids in advanced, or is there a cap on or an expectation for advanced?
That's through the yes, Kathy Moffitt, director, indeed, through co-chair Allard. That is something, member Hemshoot, that we would have to research and get back to you on.
Thank you.
So we got a lot of stuff that's going to come back to us. I appreciate that. I'll make sure my staff follows up if you guys can follow up too. And then we'll get that out to all the committee members as well. Is there any other follow-up, Representative Hemshoot?
No, thank you.
Okay. If you can continue with your presentation.
So then we look at the AK Star results in math for all grades 3 through 9. And you can see we're about 32.5% proficient. As we look at math by each grade, there you go. So this is the look for each of the grades individually, as well as what the pie shows it with the all.
Representative Ruffridge, has a question.
Thank you. Just a well, actually a super general, and this has just hit me all of a sudden, and it might be the stupidest question on the planet, but we're going to see what happens. So we've put all this focus into reading, and I'm wondering if there is some correlation between kids who are successful in reading by third grade. Does that equate to skill in mathematics? Like, is reading the base for all other education success?
All right, we got 4 people here that are invited. Anybody want to make that?
I will defer to Elizabeth for that question.
Dr. Gunninger, can you put your name on the record and respond to Representative Ruffridge's question?
Good afternoon, Elizabeth Gunninger, or good morning, still morning. Elizabeth Gunninger, Assessments Administrator at DEED. So what I can say, I don't know exact numbers or metrics on the correlation of, you know, student performance and mathematics, but what I can say is that information that we've gleaned through test development activities and input from educators over time around the way we're assessing mathematics and science, I'll add to that, is that we've progressed with the Common Core State Standards and the current iteration of the Alaska Academic Standards, is that there is an element of the standards that is very reading heavy, even in content areas that is not reading or literacy. And with that comes the expectation that students have the ability to think critically about information that they're reading or interpreting. And that comes through in our assessments. So our mathematics assessments and our science assessments do have a fair amount of text and graphics, graphs, other types of information put in front of students for them to review, read, interpret, and then respond to. And one of the things that we've been doing over the last year is really looking at what we call readability. So we have developed some readability metrics, looking at research from other states, looking at how other states are considering what they're putting onto their assessments in those content areas in particular, and how that relates to the reading expectations at grade level. So I'll make a general statement, but then we can follow up too. This is very much in process, in progress, as we define for the state what our readability expectations are, and also working closely with our vendors to put that into practice on our assessments. So it's going to be part of the development process for many years as we iterate on that. But in general, we would expect that students for math and science see content that is approximately 2 grade levels below their actual grade level, so that reading expectation is not prohibiting them from accessing the information and demonstrating their knowledge of that content area. So I don't believe we're quite there yet, and we're working a lot around how do we make sure that those expectations are fulfilled, not only on our state assessments, but how do we ensure that educators are aware of some of the research and the expectations around readability and how that plays out both in classroom instruction and on our assessments.
Just a brief follow-up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I know we have lots of slides to get through, but you mentioned something about students seeing information below their grade level, a couple years below their grade level. And I think that's in reference to the assessment as they, and I know that this assessment is graduated, or I'm sure there's a term that's different than that, but where it presents you with information that it would deem to be easy and then progressively gets harder. But what did you mean by giving students below grade level information? I guess I just wanted to get clarification.
Sure. Elizabeth Greniger, Assessments Administrator at Dean. Great clarification. I do want to clarify that. I'm talking specifically about the expectation for reading level. So when we're talking about there are metrics, they're quantitative and qualitative measures that help us define the information that students read and what grade level that might fit at. And so we've analyzed that, and we have some tables that sort of define at each grade level what would be the expectation for on grade level reading. And so what I'm referencing specifically for math and science is that we want to ensure that students can access the information and still demonstrate their on grade level performance or abilities for the content area. So we don't want the reading ability to prohibit a student from demonstrating their knowledge around science concepts that are at grade level. So for example, our fifth graders take the science assessment for the first time. We don't want the grade level, the reading expectation for those fifth graders to be at fifth grade or even higher, because we want students to access that information. We want them to be able to read proficiently and to demonstrate that they understand the scientific concepts that are being measured for that grade level. And so with that comes an expectation that the reading levels of any information that's put in front of students, passages or graphs and tables, takes into consideration that the reading level should be slightly lower so that students can read, understand, and demonstrate that scientific understanding.
So, follow up if I may, Madam Chair. So to maybe put that into a sentence, when taking a math or science proficiency exam, the reading content of that exam, if you are in fifth grade, is written at a third grade level.
And Elizabeth Greniger, in response to that, we are working toward ensuring that our assessments reflect the expectation that our students are not seeing only grade level reading material on those other assessments that are not assessing reading. We're not there yet. This is an area that we're working on.
I'm sorry that... Thank you. Yeah, that felt like a simple question. So in math or science, when you take the math or science proficiency exam, the reading component of that exam is at a lower grade level. Yes or no?
Currently at this time, it is at grade level or lower. Our efforts are to ensure that it is consistently at a grade level that is accessible for all students in that grade.
That's not your representative Ruffridge. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know how many times the same question.
Can
but
I ask what you think?
Sure.
So are the assessments at lower grade level? Yes or no? Is that fair? Representative Ruffridge, yes or no? It looks like Ms. Moffitt wants to chime in.
Sure. I wanted Kathy Moffitt, Director of Deed, to co-chair Allard, to co-chair Ruffridge. I first wanted to make sure I understand your original question. And I thought that your original question was, we have a very heavy focus on reading. And is that focus going to impact the learning outcomes in math? Was that roughly your question?
Through the chair, I think my question was, if we're very heavily reading focused, I'm wondering if just in the general world, not Alaska education, but does success in reading, if a child is able to read well, do they typically perform better in math and science? And then in the answer, I heard something that concerned me, that potentially we're adjusting things in our testing to be at lower grade levels. And I'm just looking for now general clarification. But my first question was, does success in reading equal success in math and science on a general level?
And on a general level, I would say yes. There is some research out there that we certainly could do a follow-up with you on that. I think that Dr. Griniger was suggesting is that when a student is doing math, we want to make sure that we're measuring the outcome of math concepts versus the reading. And so I think things might be worded in a way that drills into what is that math concept that we're measuring, and making sure that, say if I used a word that the child had never been, and I said something, they probably would know this, but let's just say the sum of, and if they'd never heard sum, that would impact their ability to solve a simple addition problem. So that there's a lot of look at that to make sure that we're providing the best ground, if you will, for students to be successful. There's a lot of confusion because the two tests are combined. In the MAP growth, it's adaptive. You had mentioned that, and it will, and that's really, I love the MAP for that reason, that it will take kids to a more difficult and also take kids to an easier based on how they're performing. So it really kind of levels it out. A summative assessment is measuring against the standards that we have for each grade level. And so that's a different look, and it's not going to be adaptive to that degree that the MAP is. But we will get back with you on your other question, which is, do we in fact have the reading material two grade levels below the student's grade level? We'll get back with you on that and try to clarify that in a better way.
Yes, a follow-up.
Yeah, just a comment, I think, because, and I think your example helps me understand sort of what the direction is here. But I will say, just for the record, I think that particularly in math and science, the words that you use there do matter. And so a child in third grade should know what a sum is. In science, you should know what some of the scientific words are for that grade level. And so I do actually have a concern that if we are a fourth and fifth grader should be dealing with fractions and decimal places and long division and other types of things. And if we're asking them at a lower grade level to in the test itself about more difficult subject matter, those things might not align all the time, particularly if we're not using the words that correlate with a more difficult math or science subject matter. So it does cause me concern. I would like follow-up on that, but I apologize for pausing the slide. I know we have gone over time.
We're almost done.
Yeah. We have two slides left.
Yep.
I'm going to want you guys to kind of push through it. Okay. I think I'm going to have you come back because we have a ton of questions.
Okay.
And I think that that's fair that we bring you guys back, even though you're going to probably send us the answer. I think it would be great for the community. I'm going to let Representative Hemshoot, if you could quickly ask your question, and then we can wrap up the other slides.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can be really fast with this. I think a major thing that's missing in this entire presentation is the history of testing in Alaska for the last decade. So if we go back, we had the standards-based assessments for years. A lot of that was done on paper. Then in 2016, the statewide test was canceled due to a cable break, or 2017, I can't remember. So the internet actually was broken. Then we moved to the AMP, sometimes on paper, sometimes online, depending on your district and your grade and all this other stuff. Then we went to, then we had a pandemic, and then we have AK Star. So kids in this state have been using a different test every 3 years or so for the last decade. So when we try to talk about how our kids are doing, we cannot overlook all of the change, and I would call it chaos, in our assessment system. The AK Star is great. I hope that we can stick with it for a very long time, but we must build that context when we talk about assessment. The other thing is we cannot overlook the pandemic. And then the final thing that I want to say is you can see science and social studies are the application of learning. That's where you take your ability to read and your ability to do math and you apply it to something. And our scores in science are higher than anywhere else. That's evidence that our kids are actually doing better than what we see in other places. And so I'm going to say over and over and over again, more focus on science is not only beneficial for our students, but it also really showcases that they do know how to read and they do know how to do math. So thank you for the presentation. Thanks for letting me talk about
chaos. Of course, and I just want to follow up with Representative Hemshoot. We also had an avalanche in Eagle River and we had major earthquakes.
See?
There's been a lot of disruption. So I'm going to let you guys quickly wrap up and then we're going to...
Okay, so moving, Kathy Moffitt, Director indeed, moving on with Representative Hemshoot to the science. This is our science. So this is our Alaska Science Assessment, and you can see to her that we are about 37% in, proficient and above. So it does have a higher success rate than the math and reading. And as we look at it by the grades, this is the result.
In the absence of instruction.
All right, so is this your last slide?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And this is just, in all data and information, you have to do something with it. And so these are some of the ways that we do things with it. So I thank you for your time, and we will definitely follow up, and please know that you can reach out for any further
questions.
All right,
so quickly I'm going to say that thank you for being here today. I appreciate your guys' presence. We'll get back, and we'll probably have another presentation, hopefully before the session is over, if possible. I would offer to committee members, if you have bills that you want to be heard, I'm willing to listen to those, and that I will have my staff reach out to you, and you could give presentations to this body. And that concludes our business for today. The House Education Committee will meet again next week. I don't have
you meeting on Monday?
On Monday, the 29th at 8 a.m. So you know other business today. We are adjourned.